Okay, this is a short interview with Stephen Sloan. I'm going to have Stephen introduce himself in a bit more depth, but I am Troy Reeves, and the hat I'm wearing today is managing editor of the Oral History Review. I'm also head of the Oral History Program at UW-Madison. So, Steve, if you could introduce yourself, and then we'll get going.
All right, my name is Stephen Sloan, and I'm the director of the Institute for Oral History at Baylor University.
So, Steve, if you would start by telling a bit of your story, particularly as it pertains to becoming an oral history educator.
Okay. My first experience with oral history education was as a student in an oral history workshop 14 years ago. Rose Diaz led an oral history workshop in Phoenix, Arizona, when I was a doctoral student at Arizona State University, working then under Noel Stowe, the head of their public history program. And Rose came in to do a special workshop for us. And so that was my first experience knowing anything about oral history education. And so that informed some of my dissertation work, some of my internship work that I did there while I was at Arizona State. And of course, it flowered into teaching a oral history seminar and leading an oral history program at the University of Southern Mississippi, which is my first job, and then here at Baylor University, where I teach the graduate seminar as well. And being any sort of oral historian, you very quickly get the opportunity to teach oral history to a variety of different audiences. And so one of the things I do is I not only teach students, but I work with faculty members to instruct in oral history, community folks working with oral history, and then probably most challenging, teaching oral historians about doing oral history. And so through those different populations, I feel like I've had a variety of experience in oral history education.
Thanks, Steve. This is where the oral historian in me wants to ask a bunch of follow-up questions, but I don't think we want this podcast to be, 2 hours long. So, our next question is then specifically, let's reference the piece that's in Volume 39, Issue 2. The title is "On the Other Foot: Oral History Students as Narrators." So, if you would talk a little bit about your path to writing that piece, and/or why you chose to focus on the topic of students as narrators.
I became interested in writing on that piece. It really stemmed from just an assignment I began incorporating years ago into my graduate oral history seminar. I wanted students to have this baseline sort of experience of what it was like to be interviewed. I knew if they grew to become oral historians or build an oral history career or do oral history research to inform whatever discipline they were in, their research agenda, they would never get the opportunity again necessarily to be on the other side of the mic. And I wanted them to have that as a baseline experience so they would really understand the collaborative nature and the co-creation nature of oral history and what it's like to be on the other side. Sometimes community folks can have more of a sensibility of this than academics as what it means to participate in an oral history interview. Oftentimes, community folks have relationships with their interviewees that academics and students don't necessarily have. And so I wanted them to have that experience, and I wanted them to draw on that experience. Really, what I'm trying to instill in them is some of the sensibilities that I think are very important to have as an oral historian. And there are things that are elusive in textbooks, elusive in lecture, but something I feel like that could be gained better through experience.
Were there things that either you found in that survey that surprised you, or things that you wanted to incorporate in this essay and weren't able to for whatever reason?
Well, I was excited about being part of the new pedagogy section of the review. But, as I began to write it, I began to realize pedagogy is one aspect of what this assignment's doing. But what I feel like it's doing that I could expound on a little bit as it's revealing some of the intricacies of the co-creation in oral history, and really what's going on with our narrators while we're conducting the interview, what their thoughts are, what their feelings are, how they're experiencing things. I was surprised at how personal it was for each narrator. I don't often think of that when I'm doing interviews. I know it's, of course, their personal stories that they're telling me, but the way they're experiencing it is very unique based on their perspectives as an individual. I also didn't realize as much until I got into this is how much I'm being read, how closely the narrator is reading the interviewer. You know, not just what the questions that they're asking, but their poise, their manner, their assumptions that they're making about the interviewer, the assumptions that they're making about the interviewer, how that's fueling the way that they're talking. Even something as innocuous as nodding your head during an interview, how that can eventually change the story that the narrator is sharing. Because it indicates agreement and encouragement towards certain information, privileging certain information over other information. And so it really opened my eyes to, I guess the best way to say it is it turned up kind of the resolution on my understanding of what's really going on in that exchange. And so I chose it as a pedagogy piece because that's the roots of it, but I found in getting into it that it's really a broader revelation that's available here on what's going on with oral history.
Yeah, I want to comment on that too, because and what surprised me the most, and you alluded to it earlier, that sometimes teaching oral historians is the toughest audience because we're all sort of set in our ways. I talk a lot when I teach folks about the smiling head nod, and your piece and what you brought out from those student surveys showed me that you know, the smiling head nod may not be at all times the best nonverbal cue. So I appreciate the piece for a lot of reasons, but that's one of the reasons that I definitely got something from it.
Yeah, and it's not my hope that we as interviewers become completely self-conscious about blinking or making a motion or things like that. I just think it's important that we really understand what's going on. There are all sorts of dynamics at work that we don't necessarily realize are informing what we're gathering. And I was grateful that these student essays opened that up a little bit more for me.
And Steve, I don't know if you answered this in my sort of convoluted two-part question, but were there other things that you wanted to say in this essay that you didn't get a chance to?
I think if there were other things that I would have included more, it would be more of the students' sort of voices, the way they. Made sense of the experience. That was one of the things that I found most interesting in all of them. They analogized what being interviewed was like. One of the favorite ones that I didn't necessarily include was a young man who was a graduate student who talked about taking his daughter to the zoo and looking at the animals and enjoying their antics, and he talked about the different animals and what it was like to sit and observe and watch and try to understand, and that he made the analogy that being a narrator was a bit like switching roles there and being observed. And so I enjoyed, pretty much consistent in all the interviews, what they would do, and I didn't ask them to do that, but they would talk about what oral history overall was like, and I really enjoyed those analogies that they contributed. And so I think I probably would have mixed more of those in there that didn't necessarily make sense as far as takeaways for what we do as oral history educators, but I found them very colorful and made me think about the process differently as they talked about what it was like for them. And it was really this picture of them trying to make sense of the meaning of the experience, not necessarily what was gathered.
Thank you. You mentioned takeaways there towards the end of that answer, and you've addressed this indirectly, but I always feel it's important to ask these questions directly. So what would you like readers, particularly educators, oral history educators, to gain from this piece?
Well, I think they would, you know, how important it is to, and this is a challenge, you know, we can equip interviewees, we can equip students with tools, but how important it is to work creatively to impart the sensibilities of an oral historian to our students. And what do I mean by sensibilities? Well, I think I mean a lot of different things. And I think oral historians that have done work and are good at what they do know what I mean by that. But working to find ways to impart the sensibilities of an oral historian to students is really what I hope that they would do. Not just to students. I mean, I'm trying to do this with faculty that I'm work with. I work with a lot of faculty that are coming. They're very established researchers, but they're coming to oral history for the first time. So how do I impart the sensibilities of an oral historian to them so they can do their work with that sort of understanding? You know, how do I do that with community folks? I want to encourage educators to think about how to do that and what that might look for them in the way that they do education. I think we can become very set in our ways as far as how we approach training in oral history. You know, we talk about techniques, we talk about approaches, but that sort of thing is what I, even if all that goes into the person that's learning, the most important thing I would argue that they can carry with them that's going to add to their success is these sensibilities of being an oral historian.
Stephen, I think any good oral historian tries to leave the narrator with the last word. So do you have any other final thoughts?
I really enjoyed doing the piece. It originated with a presentation that I gave at the International Oral History Association meeting in Prague in 2010. And it kind of sat there for a while. And I didn't necessarily do anything with it, but I really enjoyed picking it up. You know, I think for oral historians, what I would hope that they would do is, you know, not that this challenges them to do that, but just the process of doing the piece made me re-examine some things that seemed everyday, seemed habit to what I normally do as an oral historian. I think it's important for us to regularly come back around and re-examine the foundations of our practice and re-examine kind of the architecture of our approach because there's new insight to be gained. There's new understanding to have. And so I guess if I had to give a last word, it would be an encouragement toward that.
Well, I agree, and it's helped me reflect more on how I approach oral history as education. So I appreciate you writing the piece. In closing, I think both Stephen and I, the reason why we're doing this is we hope those who listen to it and are interested will comment. This will be on the OUP blog, and there'll be a space for comments at the end, either on Steve's piece or the podcast that we did, or perhaps some tips of their own that they've learned as they become oral history educators. So Stephen, I want to thank you very much for giving me the time today, and I guess this concludes our initial attempt at a podcast for the OUP blog. So again, Stephen, thank you very much.
And thank you, Troy.